Larry. Fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Hang on. It's an American idiom, and it's usually used to encourage perseverance, endurance, tenacity. Immeasurable victories have been notched, not because someone was better or faster or stronger or smarter, but because they were able to hang on longer than the other guy. This episode is about training with a middleweight champion, and that I did. He's one of the greatest pugilists who ever lived. And since boxing is the only sport I've ever given a shit about, it was a very special experience, and I'll tell you all about it in just a little bit. In fact, be sure to visit the show page at thatlarryshow.com and see a picture of the champion and me after one of our training sessions. Hanging on can mean triumph in just about any competition. Athletics, business, warfare, politics, academics, and life itself. There's an American billionaire named Sumner Redstone. Real name, Murray Rothstein. He's 96. And part of the reason he's been around for nearly a century and is one of the richest guys alive is he is really, really good at hanging on. How good? Well, at the age of 55, the Boston hotel he was staying at caught fire. Redstone was on a high floor, and he hung on to a ledge by his hands for something like 30 minutes. 60% of his body was burned. Doctors said he'd be an invalid. But within a year, he was playing tennis with the racket lashed to his damaged and gnarled hand. Redstone credited that horrific experience with giving him the grit to go on and buy out the massive entertainment and communications empire Viacom, which at the time included CBS, MTV, Paramount Pictures, and Blockbuster Video, which in the VCR days was the Netflix of its era. Most people would have let go of that burning ledge. Redstone was not a circus strongman or anything like that. And many individuals might sustain injuries similar to his and basically allow that setback to hold them back for the rest of their lives. It might be the defining moment of their lives, a trauma that would never be overcome. Not Redstone. It's fascinating to study people who change their names. Redstone took his from the mighty Redstone rockets that powered the early part of America's space race with the Soviets. I guess the guy wanted to let people know he had thrust, huh? Many studies show that people's names can have a tangible effect, positive or negative, on the trajectory of their lives. Dictator Joe Stalin pulled his name out of his ass. An ass that was kind of close to the floor, as Joe was reputedly 5'6" with his elevator shoes. But he wasn't going to let his height keep him from reaching the stars. His made-up name means Man of Steel. Now Redstone is embroiled in all kinds of messy litigation. Lawyers and plaintiffs are circling him and his estate like buzzards. He is, after all, 96. So you have to wonder, maybe he hung on too long. How many billions are enough? Does he wish that maybe at age 76 or so, he said, fuck it, I'm done, and went fishing, or bought a harem from some oil sheik, something like that? But then again, he doesn't seem like a stop and smell the roses type. Probably gets his jollies in business combat. Some guys find their bliss in competition, and when that music stops, they stop. Which brings us around to the underlying theme of this show, hanging on versus letting go. It's one of life's greatest conundrums. How do you hang on? And for how long? When should you let go? It must be really tough on professional athletes. When they stay too long, maybe don't squirrel away the money and have to try to keep going, even when they shouldn't or can't. I used to hang out at a place in Manhattan, Victor's Cafe. It's still there. It's a New York institution. Cuban cuisine, fantastic food, cool tropical decor, including skylights, and a U-shaped bar which kind of facilitates conversations with people across that bar. A guy I worked with back then was born in Cuba. His family came here when Castro and his gang of commie garbage took over. His name was Frank, and Frank's hatred of commies was epic. So once in a while, Frank and I would meet at Victor's for a brew after work. And besides the great chow and booze and tropical decor, Victor's attracted an array of Damon Runyon-type characters. One evening, the place was packed, and I witnessed a scene that looked like something out of a movie, but it happened in real life. And it also triggered a brief but cordial relationship with one of the greatest fighters who ever lived. The door opened, and in walked a couple. The dude was tall and slim, maybe in his 40s. He was dressed in white from head to toe, white Panama hat at a rakish tilt, white three-piece suit, black silk tie, a walking stick with a fancy brass head. He wore a black eye patch and had a scar running down one hollow cheek that literally looked like the laces on a football. His face could have been cut from slate. His features were that sharp. The "don't fuck with me" vibe that emanated from him was palpable. On his arm was a babe. Her appearance was equally striking and severe. She had shoulder-length brown hair, thick and shiny. Her face was sexy as hell. Almond-shaped eyes, full lips, but not those duck lips in vogue today. You could have sliced cheese with her cheekbones. Her body was not of this earth. A perfect hourglass with taut boobs straining the buttons on her satin blouse, a wasp waist and generous high ass. She wore black. Her skirt was slit to the waist, and every step revealed a length of thigh equal to her magnificent calves and ankles. Her shoes were spike-heeled ankle straps. When they entered the place, they took a few steps inside and stopped and looked around. Were they searching for friends or the hostess? Then this weird thing happened. The entire restaurant stopped too and stared, and this was in Manhattan, where everyone has pretty much seen everything. But these two, holy shit. I was expecting him to produce a stiletto and pick his teeth with it. A hostess approached them and showed them to a table. Then the room tone returned to normal. Across the bar, a dude looked at me with that, holy shit, did you see what I saw kind of expression. I nodded and laughed, and then I thought, that cat looks familiar. And then it hit me. It was Roberto Duran, El Diablo, Manos de Piedra, one of the most ferocious fighters in history. He held belts in 4 different weight classes. The guy was a fucking legend. Then I noticed he was flanked by Babage. They were hot, but actually, kind of lukewarm after what had just walked through the door. I wondered if they were working girls. Who can say? You never know. Then my pal Frank showed up. We had a couple drinks and left. I gave Roberto a little salute as I exited, and he smiled and waved. Over the next few months, I stopped in Victor's for a brew now and then, and each time, there was Roberto on the same stool, washing down fistfuls of banana chips with long-neck buds. And each time, we'd exchange a couple words usually about his upcoming bout with Sugar Ray Leonard. Or about that chick that was with the guy with the hat and the eye patch. That always made him laugh. As the fight grew near, I asked him if he was training hard. He answered yes. In fact, he said, "You know what? We're training together." And he signaled the bartender to bring me a drink. Well, this cracked me up to no end. And that evening, I began telling everyone I knew that I was training with Roberto Duran. Although he was going to have to kick Sugar Ray's ass solamente. And the days and the weeks whizzed by, and being a lifetime fight fan, I'd never heard of any training regimen that might include visits to a saloon restaurant. But what did I know? I was a layman. Maybe Roberto was at Gleason's 10 hours a day and lapping Central Park for his road work. And he just stopped in a Victor's after a long day to unwind a little and hydrate. Legend held that Victor, the eponymous owner, had discovered Roberto while visiting Panama. That he'd seen him as a young kid deck some punk in the street fight and recognized his potential. Brought him to the U.S., connected him with trainers and managers. I've no idea if that's true, but that's what I'd heard. Sugar Ray Leonard had fought Roberto twice before, one win, one loss, so this fight would settle the feud for all time. Roberto was 38 then, past the prime of most fighters. Leonard was 5 years younger. Would experience and toughness triumph over youth and energy? Who knew? But I was still damn curious about how Roberto was spending his daylight hours. Finally, it was only a week or two before the fight, which would be held in Las Vegas. So one day after work, Frank suggested we stop by Victor's just to see if Roberto might be there. To our utter amazement, he was. Frank knew I was a big fight fan and a fan of Duran's, and after we settled in, Frank pulled a camera from his pocket and asked Roberto in Spanish if he'd take a picture with me. Well, the champ hopped right off the bar stool, and as you can see in the photo, Victor had an oil portrait of Roberto on the wall behind us. I put my arm around his shoulders as Frank said, "Queso." I felt like I had put my arm around a cinder block wall. The guy was like concrete. After the snapshot, I had to ask him again how his training was going. Well, this time he put his arm around me and he said, "Hey, amigo, I get $7 million, win or lose. $7 million. He punctuated each word with a squeeze to make his point. I understood. But still, I went home that night a little bit melancholy. Most people probably want their favorite fighters to quit on top, like Marciano did. But then he went and got himself killed in a plane crash. So there's that. I've no idea whether Roberto needed that $7 million. Maybe he did, or maybe, like Sumner Redstone with his business battles, boxing so defined Roberto Duran that he just could not step away. He had 119 professional fights and finally retired at age 50. That's a hell of a run. And unlike so many of his peers, Roberto seems to have retained his faculties. He is one tough, tough hombre. And he's still training fighters. So he really isn't retired at all. People who retire usually had jobs they hated. Sad. So did Roberto hang on too long? It doesn't look that way. I have this email from a listener and Patreone who is in the jaws of a dilemma a hang-on or let-go style dilemma, and it's romantic in nature. Those are far more difficult than the career variety because they can't be measured in money. Until the divorce, then it's all about money. He asks to remain anonymous, and here's what he has to say. Hey Larry, I'm a long-time listener and proud Patreonee. Your shows have always entertained me and enlightened me, but now I need some advice. My girlfriend and I have been dating for 3 years, living together for half of that time. We're both in our late 20s and in good shape financially. She's begun to talk about marriage and I'm freaking out. Compounding this, I've met a girl at work and she really pushes my buttons. We've been out to lunch a couple times, dinner once, made out in my car, but nothing more. We get along really well, maybe too well. I'm starting to feel pressure and I don't know what to do. My girlfriend is a wonderful person. Do I love her? Yes. But while I can't say the thrill is gone, let's say the thermostat has been turned down. And I can't stop thinking about the girl at my office. What do? Well, my friend, your situation is one only a few tens of millions of guys have faced before you. The lucky part for you is you are neither married nor a parent. Once you are, a situation like yours morphs from unpleasantness to lives derailed. It seems that the critical interval of time in most relationships is around the 18-month mark. That's often the Rubicon of pass or play, commit or break up. Unless you're in different hemispheres, it's usually sufficient time to get to know someone pretty well, well enough to decide if you want to spend the rest of your life with them. Then if you get married, it's a good idea to delay procreation for at least another 18 months to see if the thing is going to work out as you hope. Marriage without kids is just dating with a contract that can be voided. Once there are children, there's no voiding anything. You are bound to that person for eternity. So you need to look at a few things. Guys are not hardwired for monogamy. Try to imagine yourself with the hot babe from your office for the last 3 years. Would you still be as hot for her? A friend of mine, the fabulous Don Kane, who had been around a lot longer than I, had a brilliant observation for guys considering marriage. He said that if you kept a big glass jar by your bed, and every time you had sex with your girlfriend, you put a jelly bean in that jar. And then, once married, you removed a bean each time you had sex with your wife, you would both die with jelly beans left in that jar. So the moral of the story is, you better have something to talk about. Now, of course, Don's fable was only for illustrative purposes, but you get the idea. And by the way, you can learn the 3 secrets of a happy life that Don revealed to me. That's in episode 24 in the May 2017 tab at thatlarryshow.com. So here are a few ideas you may want to consider, Anonymous. First, back off the chick at work. It could be a ticket to unemployment. Corporations used to turn a blind eye to that stuff, not anymore, which is sad. What's the point of having an office if you can't have sex in it? Next, and you may find this wacky or difficult, but if you could find a way to separate from your current girlfriend for a couple of weeks, that would be a very good thing. Even if you just checked into a motel across town, because familiarity breeds, if not contempt, at least ennui. You need time away from her to see if the absence makes your heart grow fonder. Sit down and tell her the truth, that marriage scares the shit out of you, that you need some time alone to sort out your feelings. It's the second biggest decision you'll ever make, and you want to be sure it's right. Now, that may piss her off, but if it does so much that she dumps you after 3 years, well then, that's an answer in itself, isn't it? When you're apart from her for a while, and I do mean apart, no calls, no texts, you'll either feel free and happy or lonely and miserable. I wish you good luck and hope it works out well for everyone. So much of life involves either hanging on or letting go, doesn't it? Developing a knack for knowing which is critical to everything from love to shrewd investing. Of course, sometimes external circumstances take decision-making out of our hands, like the Civil War that 7 out of 10 Americans believe is brewing. Yes, I finally finished and posted that bonus episode, Civil War 2.0. Here's a sample. Imagine living under siege, where gunfire is constant, where the streets of your town, and every town, are empty of pedestrians. The only moving vehicles are police or military as they weave through countless hulks of burned-out passenger cars. Trains and buses have ceased to run. The few non-government transports that roll are cars and SUVs jerry-rigged with primitive armor, welded steel plating and Kevlar. Civilian vehicles are to be destroyed on sight, as they are assumed to be operated either by resistance fighters or criminal gangs, both of whom government has branded domestic terrorists. Supermarkets are barren ruins. After a year of hyperinflation, cash is worthless. The new currency is gold, medical supplies, and ammunition. This is the ambiance of a nation coughing its final death rattle. A superpower turned pathetic parable as the rest of the globe staggers and shudders through the convulsions of its collapse. It's a nightmare dystopia of violence, scarcity, terror, and famine. A place where no one is free, and only the very brave dare set foot outside their fortified homes. This is Civil War 2.0. For the full episode, go to thatlarryshow.com and click that Patreon button. There you'll discover dozens more bonus episodes only available to Patreon members. Hey, thanks for listening, for hanging with me once again. If you want to write to me, it's thatlarryshow@gmail.com. And follow the show on Twitter and Facebook. Just plug That Larry Show into the search bar. I'll see you this weekend for Sinner Sunday. And until that time, take no shit.